This podcast is individually owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of this show do not express those of all radio or podcast shows. Neither the hosting services or show hosts or guests shall be held liable for the content of this program. Of Dragons and Starships is copyrighted, and no recording, redistribution, or rebroadcast is allowed without express permission. Greetings and welcome to the 17th episode of Dragons and Starships, and I'm the Riddler.
Riddle me this.
Riddle me this.
And I'm not the Riddler, I'm not even Batman. I'm just a sci-fi geek who hangs out with the wrong crowd, i.e. CJ, and tries to have hilarity every 2 weeks. Welcome to our awesome show.
Awesome. Whoa. Yes, and we just finished up Halloween, so hope you all had fun out there and got dressed up and partied and ate lots of candy and went into shock.
I'm still in shock. Oh, she dressed up as the Riddler. I actually dressed up, I took a mask to work and freaked a couple of coworkers out with it, but then I dressed up in the full costume when I got home, and after answering the door 4 times, I realized I was really traumatizing kids, so I took it off and let my daughter and son answer the door for the rest of the trick-or-treating evening, and then I eventually just went to bed early, but I dressed as Guy Fawkes.
Oh, are you sure you had a mask on?
Damn it, that must have been the problem. Were my lips moving?
Your lips say no, no, but your eyes say yes, yes.
All right, that just went over the creepy edge. Thanks.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start with In the News.
In the News.
In the News. Marcia Strassman, that was sad to hear that she recently passed away from breast cancer. I remember her way back in the Welcome Back, Kotter series as the wife, and also in some movies, a lot of Disney stuff, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and Tremors. I forgot she was in that.
Yeah, couldn't remember that she was – okay, so there are some actors and actresses that I see in a lot of roles, but they look so close to each other, they start blending for me. She always – for some reason, I thought Kim Cattrall had a portrait somewhere that was aging instead of her, because I thought that was her, but obviously it wasn't. So Marcia Strassman and Kim Cattrall, to me, both hit a point where they looked almost identical.
I'm assuming you're talking about the younger Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, The one who's famous for being the old lady in Sex and the City.
Right, right. The cougar, as they call him nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Hurrah. So, yeah, I remember Marcia Strassman. Well, obviously, I didn't remember her name, but the honorary sweat hog from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Right. Yeah, I remember one of the series. It was actually one of the episodes early in the series where the sweat hogs decided to invade Mr. Kotter's home, and, of course, she's like, you know, who the heck are these people? And... Yeah, that was her rude introduction to the sweat hogs.
Yeah, it's a question you want to ask yourself in New York City, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. condolences to her family, and once again, we lost another icon of the 80s and 70s series that was, at the time, was very well known because it was a popular series.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on to some fun news. Avengers Age of Ultron, the teaser trailer came out this past week or so, and I'm excited for this. I'm really looking forward to what they do with the movie. So far, it's looking pretty accurate. It's hard to tell because it just bits and pieces, but I really like the voice that's used for Ultron, the way he looks, and all the different characters in there, including some new superheroes that are going to be in the series. They actually showed another teaser trailer as part of that at the beginning where the superheroes are trying to lift Thor's hammer. And
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's if you go on YouTube and just do a search for, I think they call it the second teaser trailer or something like that. It's pretty funny. They're all sitting around drinking, socializing, and then people are taking turns trying to pick up Thor's hammer. It's pretty good. They did a really good job of that.
Wow.
But I'm very excited. I think Vin Diesel is doing the voice for Ultron.
That sounds about right.
There are no strings on me.
Well, you need creep.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited about it. And to go along with that, a new teaser trailer just came out, and I'm shouldn't be surprised, but I am a little surprised the fact that this teaser trailer is for a movie almost 5 years away.
Is that the Infinity Wars?
So, the Infinity Wars, yeah. They showed a lot of different footage that looked like it was from Age of Ultron, possibly the more recent Avengers movie, in addition to Thanos himself wearing the Infinity Gauntlet. I'm pumped. I read the comic series years ago, both the Ultron as well as the Infinity Wars, and I am really excited to see how this is going to turn out. This is going to be absolutely epic. I don't know if you ever read the Infinity Wars or not, but if you get a chance, check it out. Obviously, it's an older comic book series. I don't know. I'm not sure how they're going to do it because this involves a lot of the superheroes in the Marvel world.
I'm looking at their phase three thing that you had put up here. That's kind of nuts.
I know.
Well.
Yeah, because they include just a snippet of the teaser trailer, of course, but then he goes on to talk about it, and it's just mind-boggling. So, unfortunately, it's 2018, so I'm actually a little less than 5 years, almost 4 years. I guess they're really trying to get people pumped up, and it's just going to keep going over time. You know, they're just going to keep giving you bits and pieces until the movie's
So
released.
just for that set of movies right there, you need to set aside $360 at today's dollars so that you can afford to take a date to that for every one of them.
Yeah, does that include the popcorn and the soda?
No, you're going to tough it out, cupcake.
I'll just sneak my own in.
That's right.
I'll stuff the popcorn down my pants.
CJ in his handbag.
And I'll share with you if you want some of
No, I don't
the
want anything from your handbag.
popcorn. Oh, and I also see on here, tell us about the most recent space jump that they did.
Okay, so you remember the whole Red Bull build up for Baumgartner's jump, and then
Oh,
all
yeah.
the drama is like, oh, is he jumping? Is he not jumping? There's no coming down from there. He better just jump, you know, whatever. And then he did all of his spins, and there was this drama during the drop. Yeah, that's great. This guy from Google, he's a computer scientist from Google, Alan Eustace. He did all of his planning, all of his prep, all of his dry runs, got all of his equipment on the sly. No publicity, no real sponsors that I really think. Maybe he did have one, but I don't
Yeah,
think he
probably
did.
Google.
He just went right under the radar. He went up. Instead of having this fancy ass capsule that Baumgartner did, you can see the picture here on the link I put up. He had his suit explosively coupled to the bottom of the helium balloon. By the time he reached his target altitude, he blew it. He free fell for 15 minutes and then landed. No fuss, no muss, baby. You can even watch the video, you know, because he used GoPro equipment to do his whole deal. And I guess there were some people on his team that either in a helicopter or, you know, somewhere nearby, maybe they actually jumped out and traced him down. He got plenty of good footage, and I guess they must have had somebody tracking to make it official, because that was basically a gauntlet slap right in Bumgarner's face. Because I remember when Bumgarner got done with it, he's like, "I'm never doing that again. I'm never doing that again." Like, get out of here.
Well, as is typical with anything, you know, when they're trying to market something, everybody knew about it because Red Bull was promoting the hell out of it. And in addition, of course, they've always got to throw in some drama. Oh my God, he's spinning. Oh my God, this
Oh,
is
check
happening.
this
Blah, blah,
out.
blah.
Here's the sponsors really are low key on this thing. It was Atomic Entertainment and Paragon Space Development Corporation. So I got a feeling that where Paragon came in, might have actually been this environment suit that Alan was wearing, because it was custom built to him. But it, you know, everyone's trying to get the new spacesuit contracts because the civilian market is really getting ready to heat up, and they're not going to be paying, you know, what they used to charge for those spacesuits, for EVAs, for the ISS and the shuttle missions. They're going to find a way to make it doable without breaking the budget.
Oh yeah.
So,
well, I think what we should do is our next project, our next big project is get a mock-up of our logo and attach a GoPro to a big balloon and shoot it up into space so that our Dragon and Starship will rise to the heavens.
Okay. We got to get some readership out there anyway.
I know, right? Maybe it'll land in somebody's backyard.
Yeah. All right. What's up next? Okay, we've had some tragedy this week. It started out not being too awful bad. So there's a civilian. Do you want me to go ahead with this?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, there's a civilian company named Orbital Sciences that has a contract for resupplying the ISS and for doing other things, launching satellites. And they use the NASA launch facilities that are at Wallops Island in Virginia. And they had a Cygnus rocket with a or an Antares rocket with a Cygnus capsule on it that was supposed to go up with experiments and I think some supplies to the ISS. And if you go to the link that I put up, it shows where it exploded, like within 1,000 feet of liftoff. But that was pretty much the range officer pulling the abort on the launch because it had lost propulsion and it was starting to come back down. So in order to keep control of it, they blew it up.
Oh, okay.
But it's still, you can see the aftermath the morning after where it splattered all over the beach and half the landing or the launch pad.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on the news this morning. It was a mess.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple days went by and then Spaceship 2 was undergoing a powered flight test where it had dropped from White Knight 2, and as soon as it ignited, it's, I believe their engines run on some compound that's butyl, rubber, and something else. Something went horribly wrong, and the engines exploded. What was left of Spaceship 1 crashed. Co-pilot died. Another one was taken to the hospital. I haven't heard how that person's conditions are at this time. They're looking into it. It was over the Mojave Desert when this happened. One thing is that the president of Virgin Galactic and Richard Branson have both come out and stated, you know, well, you know, these things are part of the nature of this. No one is that has an advanced $250,000 seat on the thing has called asking for a refund yet, so we're still going forward. Which I applaud that they still need to go forward, but they need to, I don't know, they need to figure this one out, man.
Yeah, I'm concerned about if this is going to put a damper on doing any future flights or if there's any other companies that are going to jump in and try to take their place or if they're going to go ahead and I'm sure they've got more than one ship ready to go. So it's very possible that they'll just go ahead and continue to move forward. If nobody's asking for a refund, at least not yet. I mean, that could be something that takes time, or they may be just sitting back waiting to see. From what I heard, is it's possible that they may just get refunded anyways because of the nature of the ship explosion, and that's going to push them back a ways. So they're going to go ahead and refund them, and then when they're ready to go again, open it up for tickets.
Yeah, that would be the right thing to do right now. I'm a little troubled. So there's actually two companies that are trying to do this space plane business. One is Spaceship 2. Another one's a British company. Well, Virgin is, I guess, officially British too, but Scale Composites is not. The other company is X-Core. And my problem right now, okay, X-Core, I don't know that I haven't seen any news that their plane or their vehicle has been even up into validation testing yet. Spaceship 2 was on the edge of starting its validation testing, which would be its next step before being certified to carry passengers other than test pilots.
Well, I believe they had already done a test prior to this too. I mean, it was like last year, I believe.
They did. It was successful. But the problem is they have to do a certain number of tests. Just like FDA and drugs, it's the same with the FAA. You have to do a certain number of tests under certain conditions before they will validate you and certify you for passenger carrying.
Right.
So this thing, what bothers me right now is that is the second, I believe it's the second fatal accident since scaled composites started working on the whole, or came into being and started working its way towards Spaceship Two. The first one was, I think, a set of fuel tanks exploded out at the Mojave site. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Weren't they just, yeah, that was just a test on the engines themselves, right?
That wasn't even the engines. That was the fuel tanks out at the storage tanks. That was kind of a horrendous accident. They, I think they got pinned to the mat there for a while by OSHA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now I'm starting to wonder if the FAA and the safety, you know, transportation safety, are going to have them pinned down for a little while investigating this before they're able to move forward again. They probably are going to have to show some robustness in their problem-solving skills at the least.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's why I was worried about how far back they're going to get pushed, because, I mean, when the Challenger blew up, it was a good 2.5-3 years before they ever went back up again. So,
yeah, I think this is a good this is a very livid example of why I think Burt Rutan stepped away after he had achieved the X Prize and Spaceship One. He didn't want to be part of this long process of trying to get a civilian rated passenger craft up and going. He's more on the edge of aeronautics, and, you know. But, yeah, I really am. My heart goes out to them. They were very brave people. They're pushing on the edge, you know, and hopefully they're not so knocked back that it goes away. Hopefully they can pick it up and keep moving.
Yeah, I hope so, too. We've already kind of fallen way behind in general, whether it's NASA, private, whatever. And when it comes to space exploration or space flight, granted, we've been doing some things like the space station and other things, the telescopes. I feel like we should have already been on Mars by now.
Yeah. Here it is. NTSB begins investigation of Virgin Galactic spaceship crash. So, yeah, that's going to hold them down for a bit.
Yeah.
Well,
that's too bad.
As long as, if anyone can weather that, I kind of think they can, but we'll see.
Well, hopefully they've had backup plans just in case, and, you know, they'll be able to move past this. And, I mean, it's a terrible tragedy, you know, when it comes down to the loss of life. And not, I mean, it's bad enough that this has been pushed back and this happened at all, but once again, it just goes to prove you've really got to be careful with when you do this kind of stuff. I feel like we're still kind of primitive when it comes to flight capabilities. And they're using rockets and the fuel that they use for the rockets. It just seems so archaic now after how many decades that we've used it.
See, that's the thing also. The I'm trying to remember, regular rocketry, like for NASA or the USSR or
China.
Ariane, yeah, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, they typically, I'm pretty sure they use liquid oxygen and hydrazine. Virgin Galactic's Spaceship One, I remember, had some compound that was actually a solid, and then it was oxidized. So it was, and it was some derivative of butyl rubber, but it was an experimental fuel. So it's one of those things, and it was meant to burn cleaner and still give the specific impulse that they needed to get, you know, suborbital flight going.
I say they just use coal.
Yeah.
Probably work better.
Coal, use a hot air balloon. Yeah.
Hot air balloon, that's right. Get you high enough.
Get a Zeppelin going.
There you go.
All right, so that's the end of the news that I had. You got anything else?
No, that's all I have for now. Let's go ahead and move on to our questions of the week. Can a futuristic world plunge us back into the realms of fairy? Well, from my personal viewpoint and belief, I don't even know. I mean, I believe it's still there anyways. The realm of fairy is there.
Yeah.
From the aspect of this question, are you thinking like some type of a futuristic apocalypse or something that more or less puts us back, you know, several hundred years to where we don't have electricity or something, and then, or are you saying some event actually pushes us into their realm so that we're kind of living in their realm, like their realm expands somehow or becomes a lot larger and encompasses the Earth?
From my viewpoint, a futuristic world at some point will get more stressful because I don't have a real good outlook on what the world's heading towards at the moment. And I believe that people under stress are going to find that they have to have faith in stuff that they haven't had faith in for hundreds of years because they've been having their faith trampled on by mainstream,
right,
or things that they would have had faith. I think in the future it's going to get to the point where people can see the realm of fairy again. And we're already getting to the point right now where there's plenty of common held belief in paranormal.
Right.
And that used to be like, if you said that in the 1800s, everyone would be taking or drawing lots to see who's going to throw your ass on the fire. But,
yeah.
you know, now it's like, oh, wow, it's cool you believe in that, which is fine. Or you could turn around and get beheaded like that jackass in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
The thing that I see about, I agree with you that the realm of fairy hasn't left. It's us that have left it.
Right.
So it's still around us, and rediscovering it may be the key to rediscovering other forms of energy and technology that allow us to plunge ahead and expand into the cosmos. That would, in my mind, it's another dimension. It's another reality.
Right. Well, all this study with quantum physics, to me, suggests that they're realizing that there is another world that we don't typically see or experience, and this is going to be more or less the window into being able to do more with the paranormal, if you will. I use that term loosely because to me it's still normal, but at least in some people's realities. But when it comes down to quantum physics and the realization of how it works, that to me is the first step into entering these worlds and realizing these worlds are there. Being able to say, oh, well, this is impossible, or that doesn't exist, or that's a fantasy, whatever. I think they're realizing more and more, well, maybe it's not. Maybe there are things that people and other beings can do and exist in a quantum physical realm. I mean, there's plenty of scientists who believe in different dimensions and parallel universes, all of that. So to me, this is just another part of that.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know that it definitely would plunge us back into the realm of fairy.
I think it would be more like in your face type thing. You know, it's not that it would necessarily put us all back there, because you're always going to have the skeptics or the doubters or the people who don't want to believe it. I think what it is it's going to be more in your face, and it's going to get to a point where you can't deny it anymore.
I agree with that. I mean, there's plenty of people within the last century who have dug their heels in and claimed things that were concrete laws, or, you know, these are the facts, this is how it is, to try and bully their theories through. And then all of a sudden we turn around, dig something up, or we discover something new, and then, you know, they have to disappear because they can't stand the rays of, you know, openness that hit the fact that they were just being douchebags and trying to push their own position.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, there are areas of the ocean that haven't been discovered yet, or actually researched to a point where they understand everything, and we're seeing new types of life forms that we've never seen before, things that are a new species or part of a species that exists, but just different. But they're also seeing new species. I mean, people don't realize how large the Earth really is. They think that we've kind of gathered everything from around the world, and we haven't.
Right.
We haven't seen everything yet. So they're still keeping open the idea that Atlantis existed.
Well, here's something that kind of gets, me. Part of what you just described is the discovery of extremophiles, where they have black smokers on the bottom of the ocean. They're discovering there's bacteria and other forms of life that live in a sulfur-heavy environment. You can even find it up in Yellowstone, where they've done studies, and there's pits where nothing should be living, and they're finding, you know, bacterial colonies. Well, the people that said that that couldn't happen before have tried to save face and come back and say, well, yes, we found that it happens now, but it could never turn into a complex life form. Yeah, we're going to end up in some place like Titan or clouds of Jupiter or, you know, some place that our idiotically Walker-handicapped imagination says, no, there can't be life there. And then we're going to have our pants pulled over our heads.
Exactly.
So
at some point in time, and I feel, or maybe it's hope, I don't know, that sometime very soon we're going to be in for a great shock as a whole, because people, you know, like you and me won't be so shocked, but there'll be other people who will be like, whoa, this really exists.
Yeah, as a whole. You're a whole.
Mm-hmm. Who are you calling a whole?
You're a whole. All right. Have we beat that question to death?
I think we've beaten it enough, yeah.
All right.
Next question.
Which is linked.
Which, yeah, a lot of fantasy stories, and if you talk to anybody who practices magic or anything of that nature, there's been a lot of discussion about whether magic is good or is it evil. Like, do you have a good side? Do you have an evil side, just like the Sith or the Jedi? Or is it kind of a gray area? Is everything kind of okay to use?
Yeah.
I've had a tough time with this just because I think as a whole that it tends to be more gray. And the reason I say that is because people, when they're dealing in absolutes, black or white, good or evil, positive, negative, it limits exactly what energy basically is. And I don't think putting any kind of a stigma like this is good and this is bad, you know, this is good, this is evil, really tells the whole story.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to put it in two separate ones, I would say the magic that is being done is all depending on the person who's doing it.
And what their intentions are.
What their intentions are. So if they're practicing good magic, then to me it would be like, are you a good person? Are you kind, considerate, you know, loving, all the things that are considered as good? You know, do you help people, that type of thing? Or are you evil? You cast negative energy on people and curses and make bad things happen in general. Well, once again, who's to say it's good or bad? That's why I tend to think of it more as a gray area, because if you're using something magical to defend yourself or to defend a village or defend people, you know, your family that's around you, that type of thing, or if you're using something protective, some people feel like if you're using something that's protective to protect the house, that type of thing, are you saying this energy that you're putting, this magic you're putting into your house and your family's house is both protecting and turns the negative energy back on the person who's intending harm? Some people would say, well, that's bad because you're intending to do harm to them, you know, without them necessarily do anything with the intent of harm. That's why it kind of falls in a gray area to me, because, you know, if you want to be able to do both, or if you're willing to do what it takes to defend yourself, the same way if you have a weapon to protect yourself and your family, there's nothing good or bad about the weapon itself. It's what your intent is.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay. So I'm with you, CJ, but I think that another category ought to be installed here. So can magic be good or evil or both or gray, which I call both? I think the next category ought to be, how about poor decision? So there's a plethora of stories out there involving wizards and their apprentices and how the wizard is wise or maybe wise, and they make the apprentice do things the hard way before they ever
right.
use their magic. And if they try and cheat and use their magic to get done quicker, they get punished or reprimanded. And there's a lesson there in that if you don't have to use magic to do it, don't, because it's an act of a lazy person.
Right.
And a person who is lazy will allow their thoughts to go to something that sooner or later is going to be toxic and bad for their environment and the people around them. So with that in mind, can magic be good or evil or both? I think magic, if it's going to be practiced, which I do believe that there is some strata of energy around us that allows magic to actually work for people, for certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's going to be practiced honorably, it has to be practiced with a series of principles guarding its use.
Right.
And if you go at it without principles, totally selfish, nothing but me, 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 get someone back, get someone back, get someone back, yeah, that's definitely going to turn evil. If you do it to protect the innocent or, you know, to help set up the environment so that your community thrives, but not necessarily at the expense of anyone else, then those are good things.
Right. Well, and that's just it. I think that ultimately it comes down to intent, because once again, magic is a form of energy, and in of itself, I don't think magic can be good or evil. But how it gets twisted into whatever use that person is doing with that energy, the magic, is how it turns out. And I think ultimately what happens is the person who makes either the bad decisions or, like you said, the selfish decisions can make it become, and I don't particularly like using the word evil, more negative.
How about more nefarious?
Dark. Nefarious?
Nefarious
is a good
cool.
word.
That's a pretty good word.
Nefarious. So, yeah, I mean, anything that's nefarious, the way I look at it is anything that you can do as a person can be a good thing or an evil thing or positive thing or a negative thing. So it's the same way with magic. Whatever you do with that energy can be used positively or negatively in any aspect of your life. I mean, even with your best intention, it's that whole thing of just because you can do a thing, should you do that thing?
Well, there's an allegory with another discipline in life, and it's martial arts. I mean, you'll get people that go into the martial arts thinking, wow, I want to be cool like that guy on that movie and go around and kick everybody's ass. Then you have the person that seeks out martial arts to actually grow and develop as a person and to,
right.
to find balance. It's the same with magic. I mean, why, if you're originally seeking out magic, you're either seeking it for power or you're seeking it to heal yourself.
Right. And I think that's the biggest aspect of it in both life and the use of magic, is to have that balance, you know when to use it, know when not to use it. And at the same time, I think it's important to understand both sides, because both sides are there. It's just a question of how you understand it and how you utilize it. We make decisions all the time in our lives to decide, are we going to let that pedestrian walk in front of us, or are we going to run him over so we can keep going? You know, should I turn right? Should I turn left? Should we hunt for sport, or should we hunt to survive? There's so many different decisions in life. And so this isn't really that's part of the reason I look at it as more gray, because this really isn't so much a easy decision. There's so many different decisions, so many different paths that we can walk through, and that we also have decisions to make as what we're going to do in life. And that's one of the things that fascinates me about parallel worlds. Somewhere in a parallel world, I decided to go right instead of left. And that could have led me down a whole different path, because, you know, if I'm driving down the road and decided to take a different route, I could have gotten an accident, where if I just kept going straight, I didn't. So that's why I tend to lean more towards the gray area of everything in general, especially with magic, because every decision you make on the use, how you spend the energy and how you manipulate the energy and how you go through life makes decisions towards whether things turn out bad or things turn out good.
Well, that's something that has to be respected. Like
definitely
a lot of things in life. Let's say we equate magic to, let's take out the word magic for a second, CJ, and replace it with prayer.
Right.
If a person's praying for their relative who's an armed forces member, let's say an infantry dude mm-hmm. or woman in Iraq or Afghanistan to go out and smite the enemy, really? How about pray for their protection and at the same time pray that they don't actually have to personally pull the trigger on somebody.
Right.
because if you pray that, you know, just for their protection, well, that may come in the form of, wow, this is the best sniper in my unit. Now he's come back and he's going to spend the next 17 years in a VA psych ward because he can't come out of his zone.
Right.
You know, and that's, it's the same thing with magic or anything of power. People seek it out for various reasons. And to go back to reinforce what you said, it all goes back to their intent in seeking
right.
it out in the first place. So
yeah, it's definitely not cut and dry, and it's not something for the amateur to be dabbling with, because once again, anything you dabble with that you don't have respect for can get out of hand. I mean, fire, perfect example. You play with fire, you're going to get burned.
Well, it's kind of like you and cooking without a recipe. I mean, all of a sudden you've summoned a demon. So
yeah. Oh, I've had my share of burnt demons coming out of the oven because I didn't do it right. So
oh, is that what that smell was? Okay.
That's not what the smell was, but that was another smell. We won't discuss that.
You summoned a Golgothan. Giant shit monster.
That's right. Okay, let's talk about movies, TV shows, books, and audiobooks for the week.
Okay. How about you go first?
I'll go first. Let's see, Gotham. I've been trying to keep up on this one, and so far I'm kind of getting a little bit lost, but I know they're still kind of building backgrounds of all these villains and of course the heroes. But it's interesting the way they've portrayed the different villains. They're definitely not anything like you would expect. The Penguin, you know, when I first saw his character, I had no clue who he was until they called him Oswald Cobblepot.
Oh yeah.
Then I was like, oh, okay. So, but once again, they've taken these characters and really changed the look of them and their personality to the point where it takes some guessing. Like I said, until they actually have said at that point, this is Oswald Cobblepot, or this is, you know, all the different people that they're building up to, Bruce Wayne, Commissioner Gordon, who's currently, I think, lieutenant. He's a detective now. It's definitely a storyline that, the way they've done it is they've brought it forward to basically make it new so that you shouldn't have expectations. I don't know any other way to put it. It's definitely a lot different than what you're used to in the comics or even previous movies or TV shows.
Yeah.
So far it seems interesting. I did not catch the first one, but I've been trying to actually the first two. So I've been trying to kind of catch up here and get up with it. It's very interesting take on it.
I've been enjoying the hell out of it. It wasn't the last one. It was the one before that where the scientist who had left Wayne Industries, that they had tried to deny he ever did any work for them, went around Gotham using this, or, you know, just dropping off these little vials of this drug that he had made. It's actually a biological weapon, so it, like, they could summon all of their calcium and have tremendous strength. First scene, this guy's like a street bum, you know, playing his guitar for change, and the guy drops a vial in there. Next thing you know, he's held up a convenience store, and he's running down the street with an ATM on his back. It's like, oh, yeah, that was cool. See, what was the last one this week? Was The Hypnotist, which I didn't, you know, I was fading in and out while I was watching it. I don't know why. I can't tell you for a fact, but The main crime during the thing was the spirit of the goat man, you know, coming back and doing heinous murders that Harvey and his old partner had solved, but now there's someone else doing the exact same thing with details that had never gotten released to the public, and they trace it to this, they trace it to this hypnotist, which she all of a sudden has all these weapons around Gotham who are, you know, triggered to code words that she can have attack and kill people.
Wow.
So it was, I mean, this whole thing, and the next episode, we're going to find out, you know, if Falcone and Harvey gang up on Gordon, because it was revealed in this last episode, spoiler alert, that Cobblepot's not dead. Part of Gordon's cred with his partner and with Falcone was that he had followed orders and put a bullet in Cobblepot's head. And that was why Internal Affairs was trying to take his ass in. But it appears they didn't know what they were doing.
Interesting. One of the things I like is the dynamic that they did for Oswald and his relationship with his mother.
Ooh, Carol Kane.
Yeah.
Woo!
Oh, man. Oh, she is creepy as hell.
Yeah, she's getting riper with age, dude.
Yeah, she is. But, you know, she pulled it off. She was definitely the creepiest mother I've ever seen.
Was she the ghost of Christmas past and Scrooged?
I think so.
Because she and Bill Murray were, like, trading punches and kicks and crap.
Right. Well, I've always enjoyed her in just about everything she did. I think she was also in The Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah.
As the wife. Yeah. And so she's a great character actor.
All right. You want me to take the Flash?
Go for it.
Okay. So the episode before last showed another meta-human. This guy was on death row, and he was being executed at the time that the particle collider for, what's the name of the company? Whatever, the main name of the company, their Smart Enterprises or whatever, their reactor went wild and exploded. And this guy, when he was executed with hydrogen cyanide, turned into a metahuman. And he can turn into a gas being and kill his victims by, you know, just flowing through them and robbing them of all their oxygen-carrying capability and just killing them. And he's working his way through all the people that had to do with him dying. He almost got the Flash in this, although the Flash managed to trap a sample of him and get back and get it analyzed by having it pulled out of his lungs with a syringe. Yeah, that makes me grind a little bit thinking about it. Okay, so the last episode, there's a super criminal now in Central City. He's not a metahuman. He's just a dick. He managed to get some high tech, and he figured out how to use it to stop the Flash. So things are about to get a little heated on the next episode, no pun intended. They gave us a little heads up as to Freeze Guy is getting a partner. And looks like there's going to be a little warfare happening in Central City. There was also some crossover in this last episode, and that Felicity Smoke, who is the computer genius from Arrow, made a trip by train to go visit her friend, Barry Allen, see if there was any way to heat things up, which they're simmering a little bit, but they never seem to work out for each other. So she's on her way back to Star City to keep Stephen Amell in line, because he needs a lot of watching. All right. Are you up on the Arrow?
Actually, no. I did not see this one with Ra's al Ghul, so...
Okay, so Ra's al Ghul does not actually show up in this episode. He's in the background. His daughter is there. And this is the episode they're trying to figure out who killed Sarah, who was Oliver Queen's girlfriend. Well, actually, no.
Sometime girlfriend.
Yeah, Strumpet on the Boat. Let's go there. Strumpet on the Boat when the boat went down. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, she has joined the League of Assassins, whereas Oliver became this parkour expert and all and was doing all this stuff for the CIA, which the flashbacks are spoon-feeding you at this point. Ra's al Ghul apparently had trained John Barrowman's character, which is the magician. It comes back to mainstream light that he's not dead. He did not die with the whatever. He's still around, even though Thea, Oliver Queen's sister, knows... Wow, it's been 2 weeks. So Oliver Queen's sister has come back from wherever she was in Mexico or South America with John Barrowman, and she's back in Star City with the Arrow. She still doesn't know her brother is the Arrow, but John Barrowman has trained her to be this, I can use a samurai sword kind of person now. So she's about to get all down with it. Let's see, what else is going on here? Ra's al Ghul's daughter was trying to avenge the death of her lover, which was Sarah. Ra's al Ghul by the end of this episode has told flat out to his daughter after she reports that Arrow has given John Barrowman's character his protection. Ra's al Ghul decides, okay, well, I guess he is deciding that he's going to war with the League of Assassins. So I guess that's going to heat all this crap up. So there's going to be a bunch of assassins rolling on the next one, I predict.
Sounds like it.
Let's see,
like be a lot of slashing.
The sidekick, Arrow's Boy Wonder, has actually got some pretty cool moves, you know, and he seems to be coming along, but he keeps getting his ass handed to him. So I wonder, you know, how long he's going to last. That's about all I've got to report on that.
Yeah, and the next up we've got Constantine, which I never read the original comic to Constantine, so I don't know a lot of detail and how close they're staying in the television show, let alone the movie with Keanu Reeves, which actually, I don't know, I thought that was pretty good, with Keanu Reeves. They did a pretty good job with that. But again, I have nothing to compare it to as far as the comics go. Now, this television series is way different than the movie. And the outright snark and humor that Constantine spews from his mouth on a regular basis throughout the TV show is rather entertaining. So far, I'm enjoying it. It's definitely different. I'm kind of trying to get used to how they do things as opposed to the movie. And if there's anybody out there that's read the comic books, let us know your thoughts about this, because once again, I don't know how closely they're staying in staying close to the comics, or if they've kind of gone way beyond that.
Well, I saw both. I watched the second episode this morning on Hulu after I straightened out some internet issues. I was not, let's just say the premiere underwhelmed me. I really am fine with the actor. He's a Welshman, so he's already got my vote.
no bias there.
No, but my problem had to do with the plot and how it was almost like a narrator data dump.
To
get everyone up to speed so then they could start running with the series. And
Right. Whenever
you do that, you kind of... I feel like you're setting yourself up. Number one, they're putting it on a Friday night, which is a tough place to have a TV show.
Yeah, not a good place to start.
Number two, they do a huge data dump, which I can tell you right now, there's a lot of people out there that watch Supernatural and other shows like it, and they're probably not going to like that, how that was done. The first episode has him saving the daughter of an old friend of his who has the same skill and is able to sense trouble. So she's now out of the picture because she's given him a map with her blood on it. And he's going to spend however many years they allow this series to continue finding those blood spots on the map and trying to smoke out, you know, whoever's causing the wave of evil to flow up at an accelerated pace. The episode two is called The Darkness Beneath, I think. It takes place in Pennsylvania, coal mining town, and traditional spirits coming up from the coal mine. It's a really good episode. Not going to give any spoilers away. But I felt his character was a lot less narrator data dump driven during this episode, and I really enjoyed the performances.
Yeah, if they kept doing that throughout the series, then yeah, it would have definitely gotten to be too much, and I don't care for the narration either. It just weighs it down too much. It's almost like they're trying to give you way too much information rather than just play out the story.
Yeah, in order to use that, you would have to sit there with a frickin' notepad.
Right,
I'm not
right.
doing that. It's bad enough
that
when I watch your B-movies, CJ. All right. So anyway, I saw that the premiere got panned in a few places, and I don't usually go with reviewers of mainstream papers, but some of these other reviewers that are on the sidelines and, you know, in niche areas like Superhero Hype and Screen Rant, actually, they have a better record for hitting stuff on the money.
Yeah.
And they were saying, you know, it was kind of a lame start, and I kind of agree with them. I hope it's episode two is more of an indicator. And I think I saw the preview for episode three, which is going to center around Papa Midnight. And that's really an arch villain. I mean, he starts out, he's on both sides, just like the Angels with Constantine. Sometimes they're helping, sometimes they're the biggest screw off around, you know, and Midnight's sort of the same, but from the other camp. Mm. Sometimes he's helping Constantine, sometimes he's Constantine's worst enemy, I think. So,
well, just like so many other series, a lot of times, you know, things will start off a bit stiff and then kind of build up, and you got the characters in place and everybody's found their place, and so we'll see. We'll give it some time.
Kind of found it interesting that Constantine's running around quoting the words off of St. Patrick's shield, you know, to drive people out or drive entities back to the hole they're supposed to be in.
Hey, whatever works.
Can we do that in Congress?
I know.
Damn it.
Let's not get started on that. Right. Talking about good and evil magic, right?
Yeah. So I guess I'm next on here with this Dragons. Okay, so do we want to move on to books?
Yep, let's move on to books.
All right, so there's a Facebook group called the Dragons Rocket Ship. Yes, I know, it's similar to our name, but yes, not us. That's okay. It's a big universe. We can share it.
That's
so
right.
So they've managed to pull off something that's pretty cool for organization on Facebook. Out of their group, they've published two anthologies that are available on Amazon as of this November. The one that I've read is called The Ship's Log, which is their sci-fi anthology, and it has seven stories in it, which I thought were pretty good. The editing was probably not top-notch, but let's put it this way. These are authors who volunteered their work in, and it was organized, and I don't know that they're not getting anything personal from it except exposure. The proceeds from these anthologies go to support the group, the Dragons Rocket Ship. So they felt enough about the group that they were all right with doing this, and that's pretty cool. Let me see. The Broker and the Fetch is the first story in that anthology. I kind of saw that was lumped in there, but in my viewpoint after reading it, it's more of a paranormal fantasy. It's a difference between my definition of sci-fi and someone else's. By Any Other Name was pretty good. That was a military space opera in the Arwen series. Any of you that are actually listening to productions that are on Patio Books, you can find the Arwen series there. I think there's like 7 or 8 podcasts there that tell the Arwen series. It's about a spaceship in the Earth fleet called the Arwen. So there, that's all you're getting from me. Noskans and humans can't seem to stand each other's odors is the theme in this By Any Other Name. And it's got to do with the humans are in conflict with a big enemy, and the Noskans are refusing to help them because their ambassador that went to Nausicaa introduced roses to the planet. They're going hog wild, growing everywhere, and it's blotting out the Noskan smell for each other, which is stopping their reproductive processes. Wow, that was a big spoiler,
like,
wasn't it? Sorry.
There's nothing like the smell between reproduction.
Well, it's like, okay, well, I can't smell who the females are is how it goes with them.
Mm.
All right, next one up, Asylum by Rick Rossing, military space opera. There's some Gauld-like parasites in here. There's 11 races. There's Galactic Union. Pretty cool. And it's amazingly done in a short story format. Fairy Stories for the Very Young. There's a post-apocalyptic thing. Yeah, it's not something I really look for. The space mystery story, Pearl. It's a very good, it's an encounter story. I'm not going to put out any more spoilers here. Nixat Delegation, Warring Civilization appealing to an alien civilization for aid. It's actually more of a personal story about the guy going to the Nixat to try and plead the case and how it ends up for him. The last one in the anthology is Where No One Bleeds, which I will give 40 thumbs up for, okay? 40. That's That's 4-0. Thumbs up. It'll just have to be repeat motion here. I'm going to get carpal tunnel from thumbs up.
I didn't realize you had thumbs all over your body.
Yeah. Thumbs everywhere. Yeah, that's where it stops. So here's the thing. If you ever watched the old school Twilight episodes, you'll know exactly where I'm coming from when I say this is a Twilight episode. You will love this if you love Twilight Zone. So there's my endorsement for this. The link's up with the show notes. Here's a shout out to the Dragon's Rocket Ship. I hope they make a lot of money on this. And CJ is in the process of reviewing their fantasy anthology, but his time schedule has been a little different than mine, and plus I think I got him his copy later than I had mine started, so he'll be around with it soon. I'm going to go right ahead with the next one, Chrysopteron. CJ?
Yes?
Chrysopteron is a generation ship story.
Ah.
Yes. By Michael K. Rose. What's really interesting about this is it's the pathology of what happens to a generation ship over a couple hundred years, how Earth's technology improves while they're in flight, how they get the story back of how things are going by radio, traveling at the speed of light or, you know, thereabouts, and realize that it, out of the dozens of ships that they sent out, Chrysopteron is the only one that succeeded and made it to its destination without coming apart or mass suicides or any of that crap. But a religion gets formed on it, and there's some that believe in the religion and some that don't. When they actually form the colony, that causes a huge problem. And then 100 years, 150 years later, Earth sends a ship out because they're busting at the seams, and they need to find out if Elysium, which was the target destination, has any more room for more colonists, if it's colonizable, as they thought from afar. So these guys get there, and they have to help shift power when they land. Anyway, I don't want to give out spoilers for it. It's a very well-written story. It's very well-edited. So, you know, for those of you who are grammar Nazis or comma Nazis, yeah, this one's pretty good. This one's top shelf. Michael Rose is re-editing it for the few flub-ups that I saw, or he's having it re-edited, but there's nothing in there that detracts from the story. And it addicts you. It hooks you in.
Very cool. Sounds like an interesting concept where you're actually changing culture, if you will, along on this trip.
Yep. It is, and it's amazing how politics inside of a ship that's capped at 2,000, you know, actually evolves around people being told, no, you can't procreate unless some of us are going to die.
Right.
You know, it's not going to work that way.
The next one is the audiobooks. And you've got Dune, Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune, which I actually read all three of those quite a while ago. But these, all three of these books I did read. So what did you think of the audiobooks?
I thought they were very well done. So here's the thing. There's a lot of audiobooks out there that I'm really grooving on these days because I use them to help me get through my commute, but the majority of them are done by one narrator. You have one voice, whether it's male or female, and they're doing all the parts, you know, and I'm fine with that. I can roll with that, but it's really a high watermark of production quality when you manage to be able to pull in different sexes to do the different sex parts, we can make it all work. Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune were all produced by Random House Audio, and they had a team of actors. I mean, of course, they're big five, so they've got the budget here. Me, I'm doing my own narration. I'm doing my own audio mastering. I may put up a product someday that's audio for purchase. But the two works that I have so far sitting up in a podcast form for free for your listening pleasure, plug in at the Legacy of Daddy podcast. Anyway, back to Dune, Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune. These, when sci-fi made the new movies a couple years ago, or miniseries. They combined all three of these books into two movies. They called them Dune and Children of Dune. Paul Atreides, who is Muad'Dib, is the Kwisatz Haderach for the B'nai Gesserit. So in the span of one sentence, I've just added three or four terms to you that you will never understand unless you go listen to it or read it yourself. I'm just going to tell you that they were well done. They're very good books. And after Frank Herbert's death, Brian Herbert and one of my favorite authors now, Kevin J. Anderson, teamed up, and they kept the Dune Empire going. So the next one I'm going to be listening to is God Emperor of Dune, which was actually book four. But there's plenty of other stuff I'm listening to right now. All right. Thumbs up on that one. The link's here for the Audible products.
Yeah, I'll go and post those on the website later when we've had the podcast up. I got to say that the Frank Herbert is one of my favorite authors for science fiction, and this is one of the reasons why, the Dune series. I read those books, like I said, a while back. They came out with the movie version of Dune, which, to say the least, was okay. There were some good parts about it. They did change some things, of course, in the book, especially towards the end when it came down to the overall storyline. Then they released a miniseries of Dune after that. I believe that was on the Sci-Fi Channel originally.
Yeah, that's the one I was referring to.
Right, and that one was actually better, maybe because they had more time, or perhaps the people who took it over were a little more mindful of the book series. But once again, as usual, they changed things. I would like to see a more epic version of Dune done much closer to the book and the storyline, because it deserves it. This is an absolutely fantastic series of books. His imagination and the things that he came up with in this book was just one of the more original pieces I had ever read. So I'd be curious to hear the Audible version, just because just to see how the authors or the narrator themselves actually did it.
Okay.
All right, so now our favorite, B-movie blindness. And let's start off with the first one, Mom and Dad Save the World. This was made back in the early 90s and featured Terry Garr and Jeffrey Jones, as well as the lovely Kathy Ireland. John Lovitz plays the ruler of a planet of stupid people. And that's exactly what they are, including John Lovitz as the ruler, Todd. He's taken over the planet, and he doesn't like Earth because it takes away from it takes the attention away from him, and then he just doesn't like him at all. So in the meantime, he's watching the people of Earth through this giant telescope that can see just light years away. He catches sight of a married couple and their children, and he falls in love with the woman, Marge. Before he blows up the planet, he wants to pull Marge back to his planet using a giant magnet. So, as stupid as they are, this actually works. So, Marge and her husband, Dick, they're going on a vacation trip, and as they're driving along, Todd the Great shoots his magnet at the car and pulls it back to his planet. Of course, he tries to get rid of Dick, who gets known on the planet by all the people there as Earth Dick. Todd tries to marry Marge. And, of course, in the meantime, he's trying to come up with ways to woo Marge and, you know, get her heart so that they'll get married and then get rid of Earth Dick. That way he can have her all to himself. Well, of course, Earth Dick winds up escaping and meeting up with these bird people who are just as stupid as everybody else on the planet, but yet they also are able to figure out ways to fly, but except they really can't fly even though they're wearing wings. They tried to put in a whole bunch of different alien-type beings on this planet. One of them are fish that are basically living out of water, and dogs that are like the security, and they all look like pugs. And then you find out that one of the fish girls loves one of the fish or one of the dog security people. So now you've got this dog and fish living together thing going on. And yeah, kind of a little scary thought there as to what their kids look like. But anyway, yeah, there's Kathy Ireland, who is trying to hook up with Earth Dick, and so she whips off her clothes and climbs into the hot tub with him. Of course, you know, Dick being who he is, he's like, no, I love my wife, we can't do that. But Kathy Ireland was definitely looking pretty good in this movie.
Oh my God, Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones, yep, he plays Earth Dick.
That's the principal from Ferris Bueller.
Yep. Yeah, he's done a lot of different movies, a lot of really off-the-wall stuff. It's just too bad he was, unfortunately, a little bit of trivia here, he was unfortunately convicted of basically downloading child porn. That kind of puts a damper on him as being one of the characters I like best. He was in Beetlejuice. He was in, what were the other movies?
Devil's Advocate.
Amadeus, Howard the Duck.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yep, Howard the Duck. He's one of those actors that he's done a ton of movies. And some of them were kind of character actor type positions, but most of them were just Jeffrey Jones being Jeffrey Jones. This goes on for some time until finally they figure out a way to defeat Todd the Great. And he even has his own little theme song that everybody sings for him and he dances to. To give you an idea how stupid these people are on this planet, there's a grenade that gets put on the ground. And the grenade says, pick me up. And so, of course, people see it, pick it up, and it's called a light bomb. And as soon as they pick it up, it basically disintegrates them.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So, you know, they were able to wipe out an entire army by doing this.
Pretty cool that Wallace Shawn and Eric Idle were in this.
Oh, yes. Eric Idle plays the previous ruler of the planet, and he's actually the father of Kathy Ireland in the part there. Samong, I think her name is, in the movie. And the way he portrays this character reminds me so much of what he did in Monty Python. So it's a lot of fun. It's definitely...
It's almost inconceivable.
Inconceivable. Yes, he's in that too as well. And we come to find out, well, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but he plays an important part in that movie. He's trying to extract information from Earth Dick and winds up helping him because he once had a love too. And we find out later who his love is, which definitely doesn't match up with who he is, but it's a lot of fun to watch. It's just, you can't expect it to be blockbuster movie. It actually has a kind of a medium rating on IMDb and other places. You have to go in understanding this is a movie about a bunch of idiots and a bunch of idiots who live on this planet, a bunch of stupid people. It's just good, corny fun.
All right, you won me over. I will watch it.
You got to watch it. It's just fun.
I thought you were steering me towards some 1950s thing. I really didn't even look at it, but my time over the last week has really been heinous. So.
Well, I can tell you something right now. This movie was obviously made to be stupid because of the way they did it. And it's like I said, it's just a lot of fun to watch. However, the next B movie, Night Flyers, yeah.
You watched it?
I did watch it.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, CJ.
Night Flyers, I think the only good part about it was Catherine and Mary Stewart.
I'm not sure that was a good part, dude.
She was an 80s hottie back in the day, and this movie was made in 1987 and probably was one of the last movies to end her career. I'm not sure, but yeah, the joy of listening to nothing but synthesizer music during the entire movie, a collection of bad actors, bad writing. I mean, it was a pretty good premise. It was a pretty good idea, but yeah.
So the whole reason for these guys getting on this ship and heading out into space is to go make contact with this so-called entity called the Fulcron. Well, you hear it at the beginning. You find out at the end, yeah, we didn't quite do that. And the whole thing in the middle is this idiotic space-age witch horror movie thing, which do you want to... I mean, did you see the similarity that I saw? I think she might have played the witch, too. Captain
Yeah,
Mary
I wouldn't
Stewart.
Be surprised. she did look a lot like her, didn't she?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. I didn't see anything about it in the IMDb here. But you never know. Maybe they just didn't give her credit for it.
Yeah, and James Avery, thank God, he saved his career by becoming Fresh Prince's uncle after that, but I think the rest of them took a dive, including Catherine Mary Stewart after this little jewel.
Yeah, this the whole premise of this thing was like you said, they were going out to look for the Fulcron, this being of energy. And I didn't quite, based on the way they talked about it in the series, I didn't quite get the movie, understand exactly what the attraction was about this thing. But they wound up taking this freighter out into space. At the beginning, they did, like you referred to earlier, a data dump, as Catherine Marie Stewart is introducing and talking about all the different people who are going on this flight and giving the information and complaining about them and whatnot. The one guy in there looked like he was, and again, this is 80s now, 87. He looked like he was some kind of a weird version of Adam Ant without the makeup.
So I found out, you know, he was some, he's like a crony of Jimmy Page. So he broke into celebrity by hanging out almost as a roadie slash groupie with Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin. And then he broke into B-movies at the same time. And he was trying to give Richard Lynch a run for his money, man. I think I actually, well, I'm not going to say that I saw them, but I know he was in a bunch of soft porns, too. He got around.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's naturally what you do when you've done B-movies is you get into porn.
Yeah.
So essentially they're going off in this rented freighter ship that is run by a young man who's, once again, I swear some of these guys that were in this movie, there was like two or three of them that looked almost identical. You've got a couple people who are telepaths and are able to communicate telepathically with everybody and also hear everybody's thoughts. And then you've got a smart-mouthed kid that I guess he's some kind of a guru when it comes to electronics. And then there's I don't even know what the two girls were doing other than to be the lesbian figures. But and then there's the older scientist guy who's putting all this thing together. And then Catherine Mary Stewart, who is the project lead. So basically all she does is run around in high heels and a skirt aboard a spaceship. So this guy, this young guy is running the ship. He's pretty much attached to the ship, and he can't really leave. So he projects his hologram everywhere so he can talk to the different people in the crew. And then you've got the guy who's the telepath who's suspicious and thinks this guy, whose name is Royd, which I imagine this guy big like the Hulk or something, and he's Royding out.
I think his first name was Hemmer.
Yeah, there you go. Hemmer A. Royd. So, and so they go to travel through space, and while they're sitting there, they're eating fresh cooked food, and they're reading books and typing on these computers that all you can see on the screen are a bunch of sound waves.
I was waiting for the tennis match. Wasn't Pong on there?
Yeah, there was. It looked like there was Pong or some kind of, you know, 80s game. They didn't have anything else to do except sit around and complain, so... In the meantime, this Royd character, who's part of the ship, falls in love with Catherine Mary Stewart. He goes on to tell his life story to her. And essentially, Royd's mom was the person who originally got the freighter ship. And what she did is she cloned this boy named Royd to be her companion. And so she sheltered him away from everybody else because she didn't like people. Her excuse for not liking people was she had been screwed over a few times, and I don't like people anymore, so I'm going to get in this freighter where I have to deal with people transporting stuff back and forth, and put her son in the pilot seat, if you will. So this poor guy's been sheltered, probably never seen any other girls before. He's got mommy issues. And apparently mommy has passed away and connected herself directly, her soul and her conscience directly into the ship. Well, of course, she doesn't like people, and she especially doesn't like Catherine Mary Stewart. So she starts wreaking all sorts of havoc all over the place. And the ship starts breaking down little by little. She's trying to kill people in different ways, eject them into space and electrocute them and you name it, anything she can possibly do to get everybody off the ship. Surprisingly, she actually allowed them to get on the ship in the first place. So, yeah, why didn't she just not let them on the ship then? Anyway, so things keep going along this way. We never really – the way they did this movie was the typical cut to some random scene somewhere or some random picture – that doesn't even fit in with what they're doing overall. It's almost like they're filling time. So the cinematography and the things they were doing to cut back and forth to fill space and whatnot. And once again, Catherine Mary Stewart is, and it's hard to tell whether she's falling in love with him or she's just sympathetic towards him or what. But she winds up, you know, trying to get there to help him out. He finally comes out of his shell in the computer area kills his mom, or at least he thinks he kills his mom, to stop her from killing everybody else, and especially from trying to hurt Catherine Mary Stewart. They both wind up having to go outside because there's damage done to the outside of the ship, and it's venting atmosphere, and they need to fix it, and this is when everybody dies, basically.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody, but... So, yeah, it's very convoluted. It's very... The acting itself, and once again, I have to point to the writing, too, because you can only do so much with writing.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of bad writing and bad acting, and this is a true 80s B-movie, because I'm watching this, and they're wearing... Well, of course, you know, things do come back, so even in the future, the 80s style can come back, I guess. So they got the 80s hair, they got the 80s, you know, big shoulders, and, you know, girls are all wearing high heels in a spaceship, you know, with artificial gravity. And
yeah, Catherine Mary Stewart has her exercise routine with her portable, uneven parallel bars.
Yeah, then there's that. You know, she just happens to conveniently have that handy. And, yeah, she's a gymnast, you know, not just a scientist or a project leader. She's a gymnast. So, yeah. Yeah, this is one of those movies that just, it was tough to watch it. It really was.
Yeah, so I've got plenty of snark, too, to go with this. I'm thinking that CJ and I both pretty much, well, whatever, it's a B-movie. So there's 2 points that I really want to hammer home, even though the snark will be available for you up on the website. There's a fight scene between Catherine Mary Stewart and this groupie, roadie, douchebag, whatever he is, Michael Barr. His character who's possessed at the time, and it is a ripoff from Logan's Run.
Mm.
I mean, in Logan's Run, Logan ends up in a fight with the cosmetic surgeon who Farrah Fawcett is the assistant to in the laser surgery booth. And, yeah, it goes poorly. Also, it's a spaceship, and just happens to be a handy beaker full of acid that somebody can use. That's interesting. So
well,
going to the second one.
There's always a handy jar of acid sitting around, don't you know that?
Yeah, sometimes it's in my comments.
No!
Mm-hmm.
1 hour and 5 minutes in, you can check me on this if you want to watch this, which is fine. I mean, it's entertaining as long as you go in it with the right mindset. 1 hour and 5 minutes in, I swear to the Pantheon, they ripped off Blade Runner riffs with the Wurlitzer. They maybe changed 2, maybe 3 notes, but go check it out. If you're a Blade Runner fan, just fast forward to this point and listen to the music. You'll see exactly what I'm saying.
You know, it's funny you should bring up the laser chopping the guy up and whatnot. It didn't occur to me at that time until you just said it about Logan's Run. I'm like going, God, this looks familiar, or there was something about it, and it made me think, did I see this movie or whatever? And then when you said that, I was like, ah, that's what it reminded me of. Yeah. It was pretty cool what they did to his head, though.
Yeah, that was kind of Army of Darkness-ish.
This guy was so annoying that I was like cheering when he got his head lasered off. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, they showed us other stuff getting split open,
yep,
too. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, so just, you know, just for that alone, you should watch that movie. Just to watch this annoying, loudmouth, bad actor get his head chopped off right between the jaw.
Oh, one other piece of snark here that I feel is vocally worthy. The witch, the mother of Royd, who rematerializes at the end of this thing, she's wearing a frickin' dress from the 1700s. What the hell? She's got a bustier and big old flared out skirts and crap. It's like she's on a spaceship.
That's what I told you, man. You know, it'll be popular 1 year, and then a decade later, it's back in style again.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I think they blew the budget on the set, which is ridiculous. And then they had to go rob the next door set to get some clothing for this twit at the last minute. And the next door set must have had the Three Musketeers or something going on.
Yeah, or Pride and Prejudice or something, you know.
So my summary of that is it's a load of cheese, and for the other one, Mom and Dad Save the Planet, or Dick and Marge Save the Planet, I intend to watch it now that CJ has laid it out there.
Yeah, you'll You'll have to. It's a must-see.
All righty.
All right, now it's time for our shameless plug-ins. I'm CJ McKee, and my book is Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. You can find it both on print and Kindle on Amazon.com or on Smashwords as an ebook. If you want to read any more information about myself or about my books, you can go to mountaindragonmedia.com.
I'm Angus Day. I'm the sci-fi, I'm a sci-fi geek in this duo. I'm the creator of the Next U universe. I like to play there. It's fun. My website is nextyounivers.com. NextUUniverse.com. The U is shared. You can find sources for my books, my blog, my audiobooks, this podcast at that place. That is the nexus of the NextU universe.
Our public service announcement is if you read a book, or you get an ebook, or you listen to an audiobook, or you listen to a podcast, and if you enjoy it, please write down a review for it. We'd like to hear both sides of it. If you enjoyed it, great. If you didn't enjoy it, please let us know why, because even the negative comments can help us grow, whether it's our writing or it's our podcast show. And it's really important to get that feedback because, one, that tells us that people are listening and they are enjoying it. And, two, it lets us know that we should keep growing and keep writing and keep doing podcasts because there's a lot of people out there who are interested. And in addition to that, if there's any suggestions that you want to, anything that you want us to talk about on this show, if you have any questions, if you want to find out how to be a guest speaker, give us a shout. You can reach us at mountaindragonmedia@gmail.com. So please put a few words together and let us know how we're doing, whether it's our books, anybody's book, anybody who writes anything or does a podcast or does a blog, please let us know how we're doing.
I'd also like to take a moment here to thank CJ because we do this podcast every 2 weeks and we've had some hiccups over the last year here and there about computers going down or software not functioning the way we were trying to get it to. But CJ always takes it on himself to get the editing done, and usually the podcast is available for your consumption usually by Tuesday and we record on Sundays. So he's pretty awesome as far as taking that on and being reliable about getting it done.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Golf clap?
Yep. No, I use two hands.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And we appreciate you guys listening in, and we hope you enjoy the show. And once again, give us a shout if you want to, if there's any particular subjects or topics you want us to talk about, or if you just have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact us. Thank you so much for listening, and you all have a great night.
Ditto.